Welcome to Technorama, the podcast that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. My name is Chuck Tomasi from sunny Phoenix, Arizona, and joining me just across that virtual screen is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm doing well. I'm still quarantined, hanging out at the house, not doing much.
If I sounded a little disjointed on that intro, it's because I'm doing the video too.
Yeah.
This is going to be fun. All kinds
of. You can
fun.
Handle it. You can do it.
I hope. Let's see. I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 screens, an iPad, a Stream Deck, a big mixer, 2 keyboards, a mouse, and a trackpad. What could go wrong?
Yeah.
And a partridge in a pear tree. How has your week been, Craig?
That's been pretty good. I had a little scouting event the other day, or last week on Friday. Really not doing a whole lot. The weather has changed for the better here, for sure. I don't know about you, but it's like, I think at the moment, it's like 58 out there at night.
It's cooled down some. I would say, you know, you wake up in the morning, it's in the 70s. Highs are now down to like the 102.
So, really?
Yeah. The pool is actually getting a little crisp. I'm done with swimming season. Donna thinks she can go in a few more times. But I've always got
you're done.
Wetsuit to fall back on.
Yeah. Let's see. like today, it's going to be in the 70s all week. And it, like I said, it was kind of cool this morning. It's great. I love sitting out. This is what I get up early. I get up at 5 o'clock and I'll make coffee, walk the dog. So usually I sit out in the garage, you know, I open the garage door.
Yep.
Sit there with some coffee and just hang out with Juno, my dog. And just, even though it's dark, it's quiet, just sit there and relax for a little bit, you know, before I get the day started. It's kind of nice.
I forgot what I was going to ask you. So let's go on to the listener mail.
All right.
Letters. Oh, we get letters. We get your letters every day. Mailman, mailman, mail today. Reach right in and pull one out. Those letters. I love those letters. Let's find out what you've got to say.
Oh, boy.
Mailman, mail today.
And we did get a letter. We got an actual letter today in the post.
Oh, we did? Did I miss it? I didn't put it in the show notes? Okay.
No. I got a letter from Craig.
Oh, yes.
Donna said, you've got something important coming. And inside...
Oh, you haven't opened it?
I did open it.
So, okay.
I don't want to give away any PII here.
That's right.
Inside was a post-it note that says, this is a small token to say thank you. Thank you for podcasting with me and thank you for being a friend. And it came with a patch, a Marriott carpet Delta Shield. And that is a beautiful thing. I'm not sure how or where I'm going to wear that or display it. I might put a pin badge on the back of it because it doesn't belong on any shirt permanently.
Well, I'll be honest with you. I saw this on an Etsy shop and I went, whoa. Us three got to get one. So I got one for you and Clinton as well. So we all three got one.
Thank you.
And, you know, after we did our live show and everything worked out, I was like, I saw that and was like, that's perfect. So I figured I'd get all
together.
Three of
them. Let them see them both.
His must have showed up. His showed up today too because he sent me, dropped me an email.
Hold yours up.
Oh, yeah.
The light kind of washes out your color, but here we can do that trick. Here, Craig, have your badge.
Yeah.
Oh. There you go.
There you go. Yeah. But it is pretty cool.
We are so amused.
Like I said, if you're familiar with Dragon Con and the Marriott carpet, that's the thing where the Marriott had this weird, funky pattern, and they finally eventually got rid of it, and then people went nuts. And now it's like it's got its own little cult following. And we've seen it on cars. We've seen it on people.
Stormtroopers.
I've seen a Spider-Man with a Marriott pattern.
One of those inflatable dinosaurs now.
Yes. They were in the parade. That's right.
That was awesome.
So when I saw that, I thought that you and Clinton would appreciate that. So I had to get one for all of us.
How do you, I mean, I can understand taking the pattern and silk screening it, but I can't understand How they did that with threaded. The stitching. How do you turn that into a stitching pattern?
It's stitched
pattern?
On there. I thought it was going to be a pattern.
The back is like, equally interesting because it's almost the same pattern. That usually doesn't happen on the back of embroidery.
Yeah.
That is really well done. Kudos to you, Etsy person. We salute you.
That's right. We salute you.
You take hand, your stitched pattern.
Hand stitched.
All right. We won't get into that. That's another thing for another time. We do have some other feedback, though. We asked you last week, our social media question of the week, for Technorama, what would you do with a cardboard box? And Craig, you may have the ones from the Technorama podcast page.
All right. So let's take a look. Well, first of all, I don't know about you, Chuck, but
there's a lot of cat answers in here.
Yeah, I had a spaceship. I did all kinds of stuff like that. And I've seen others saying similar things. But here our buddy Steve London says, let me see. It says Seymour. So let me open that up.
Seymour?
This June, I decided to do some cleaning and threw away some stuff I hadn't used in ages. Among other things, I threw out an untouched bag of 5 kilograms of gypsum plaster. Gypsum, you know, they make drywall and stuff out of. It has been sitting around in my garage for a better part of 15 years. So I threw it out. Guess what? Come September, I had to buy a new bag of gypsum.
That always happens. You hang out of something for 20, 30 years and you go, it's been sitting around. It's probably no good and I'm never going to use it. And a week later, you need it.
Yeah. Well, he said he would like to create a cardboard box of requirements to store stuff in.
Requirements. Okay. But you know, there's only so much room in the house. After a while, you go, look, I got to thin out here. There's just some things that I haven't used in forever. Oh, we're getting that point in our garage.
If I had a dime for every time my wife said, why do you want to keep that? Just in case.
Yeah, no. Otherwise, you end up like my father-in-law who had 3 garages full of random stuff. And then when you die, someone's got to clean it out. It's like, that's no fun.
I'm not that bad. No. I'm not that bad. I got some cables and some card readers for cards that they don't really manufacture anymore. So it went to that point where I don't know why I'm keeping this, to the point where I go, there's a good point. I may need this, you know?
So. Or then there's just the nostalgic, you know, I have my own museum piece now. You know, punch cards. Yeah, why am I keeping these?
That's right. Let's see.
Anything else creative?
My friend Christina Norris, she says the possibilities are endless, are truly endless. Excuse me. I could build a fort, use it for storage, let the cats play in it. Yes, cats will take a box in a minute. Paint it and use it for decoration. I could wear it as an awkward hat.
Awkward hat? Free awkward
really,
cardboard hat hugs.
Wide open. This is wide open for decisions. Our buddy Jack Mangan says, don't ask the killer from Seven his question. Oh, the box. What's in the box? Digital Jan Hook says, make an imaginary spaceship.
Mm-hmm.
Get that. Teresa Thompson says, I have 4 cats. All in my cardboard box are belong to them.
All my cardboard box are belong to them. That's funny on 2 levels. I like that.
Yeah. Oh, John Miller Jr. donated to a deserving cat. There's a theme going on here. I see it.
Yes. Yes. Steve,
you know what? We got a deal on the bark box, which they send to the dogs, and it's got some toys and snacks and stuff in it.
Right.
So there, I've got a picture of, you know, the dog had the snacks and had everything out, and there's a cat sitting in the bark box.
Oh,
it literally says bark box on the side. The dog, this is why the dog can't have nice things.
There is a cute picture in there from my friend Tiffany, who I think this is a kindergarten picture where they have all the boxes lined up in a grid and all the kids are in the boxes, little boxes, and then the teacher's in a big box. So it wasn't captioned or titled or anything, but it looks like a kindergarten picture and it's very cute. Mike Wills says, put all of my computer cables I might need someday in there, including my old ribbon cables. Just make sure you wind them and tie them, because if you just throw cables in a box, it becomes a cable box that is no fun to try. And you pull on one and 8 come out and it's, secure them. Velcro straps work really well for this kind of thing. I just happened to have a Velcro strap at the ready for that. That was weird.
You know, I do wrap my cables in a way where they don't kink, but I can put them in there and they won't like get tangled in my box. I'll, you know, I'm gonna show you real quick.
I have a box of USB cables, a box of RGB cables, a box.
Look at there. Yeah. Cat litter boxes or the litter, the container, the litter comes in. What I do is I stack them sideways.
Okay.
And I've got all my stuff in them.
They look like plastic backpacks or something.
Yeah. So I can like, I pop open the thing and I can reach in and get my cables or whatever out. So there you go.
I should have dedicated that screen to you. I was not paying attention to the video. Oh, we were still sharing. All right, Danny.
Well, here, switch it real quick.
There we go. Full screen. We'll turn the title off.
And there you can see all of my junk. My open closet. There's the litter boxes.
You have a closet that's missing doors too.
Yeah, I took them up. I took them off so I could reach in there. But yeah, those little plastic boxes. I decided to reuse them, and they work pretty good. You know, it's a container. So,
well, we got to look around your house. More cats from Danny and Gary Lindro says, I used to make spaceships and draw control panels on the inside with markers.
Yes.
What do you mean used to?
Yeah. I'm doing it right now.
Mark says he wants to make a submarine. Sean says, have you read Calvin and Hobbes? Oh, yeah. Spaceman Spiff. Mm-hmm. More cat happy toys. Diane says, depending on the size, probably give it to our bunny or give her something to chew on. Oh, yeah. Rodents will chew on anything like that. My sister says, I want to ship some Tomasi family wine to my family. And then, of course, my buddy Steve says, and friends.
Right.
And Ralph says, ship beer.
To me.
More cat answers. So thank you, everybody, for your responses to that. Appreciate it very much. We will play that song. We'll have another... question of the week for you at the end of the show and in next week's social media. Yeah.
This will blow your mind. So we saw cats and spaceships. What if the cats are imagining they're on a spaceship?
They probably
are.
In
the box. They could be.
Let's move on.
Mind blown.
On this day in history for September 23rd, 2020. Let's get this camera working right. This is the 267th day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are just 99 days left remaining in 2020. It was on this date in 1642 that the first commencement exercise occurred at Harvard College.
That same date in 1806, Lewis and Clark returned to St. Louis after exploring the Pacific Northwest in the United States.
We're back. We changed it from St. Louis to St. Clark.
Where's the parade?
175 years ago today, the Knickerbockers Baseball Club became the first baseball team to play under the modern rules, and they were founded in New York.
September 23rd, 1846, astronomers Urban Le Verrier and John Couch Adams and Johann Gottfried Gall collaborated on the discovery of Neptune.
On September 23rd, Nintendo Koppai, later Nintendo Company Limited, was founded in Fusajiro Yamauchi. I got that right.
Yamauchi!
To produce and market the playing card game Hanafuda.
And it was 109 years ago today that the pilot Earl Ovington made the first official airman delivery in America under the authority of the United States Postal Office. Department.
Postal Office Department.
Yeah. I ended the sentence too early. Sorry.
Roland Garros of France became the first to fly in an airplane across the Mediterranean from San Rafael to in France to Bizerte in Tunisia, I think. I hope he headed in the right direction, not my directions. Don't go where I tell you to go. He did that in 1913. Across the Mediterranean in a plane in 1913. You can only imagine what the quality of that plane was like.
A cardboard box. And that same date in 2002, the first public version of the web browser Mozilla Firefox Phoenix 0.1 was released. I was there. I used it.
I remember using Netscape 0.92.
Yeah, I use that too. Yeah.
Happy birthday goes out of this day to German astronomer and academic Johann Franz Encke, born on this date in 1791.
And Hippolyte Fizeau, the French physicist and academic, was born 201 years ago today.
That was just funny the way you said it. Hippolyte Fizeau.
And then how do you say it?
Well, the H is going to be silent, so it's Hippolyte Fizeau.
Yeah, I like mine better.
I do too. Born September, we need Francois to come and tell us how that's really done.
Right.
Born September 23rd, 1851, American mathematician and astronomer Ellen Hayes. Not Helen Hayes.
Yeah. German engineer and businessman founded Robert Bosch. How do you say that?
Bosch.
Jim Boom? No, the GmbH. Okay. Robert Bosch was born 159 years ago today.
Bosch. You know, like the tools. Bosch. You ever use a Bosch drill?
Or the dishwasher.
Okay. We'll go with that. Oh, boy. I get the Russian this time.
Yay.
Myron Mershinov, the Russian architect and engineer, was born on this same date in 1895.
Born September 23rd, 1902. Chinese mathematician and academic Su Berkun.
I am way Berking. Behind on the camera work. I apologize.
There's
too many things going on. It's like I read mine and you were still on the camera. Sorry. Clifford Scholl, the American physicist and academic, Nobel Prize laureate, was born 105 years ago today.
American actor, singer, director, and producer Mickey Rooney was born on this date in 1920.
André Cassin, the French toy maker. He created the Etch-a-Sketch, the world's first laptop. Tablet computer.
Hey, I think I lost my data.
He was born 94 years ago today.
Yeah. American singer, songwriter, pianist, and actor Ray Charles was born on this date in 1930.
Hit the road, Jack. Also turning 77 is Spanish singer-songwriter Julio Iglesias.
An American singer-songwriter and guitarist, Bruce Springsteen.
You can't even get Bruce Springsteen right today. This is a bad day for history.
Bruce Springsteen, born on this date in 1949.
I was just watching him as he was doing some voiceover for the Sinatra special that's on Netflix right now. So it's a two-parter, but they're both 2 hours, and I'm half hour into it. It's a fascinating story. So Bruce does, because Bruce is also from New Jersey. Also turning 63 today is Keiko O'Brien, a.k.a. Rosalind Chow.
Oh, American actor, singer, and voice artist. Jason Alexander was born on this date in 1959.
And listener birthdays this week include one Brett from Wales. He was born on the 26th. Happy birthday to you. That's the way it was on this day in history for September 23rd, 2020. And I believe... Yeah, not bad for timing. Oh,
we did it in time, huh?
If you want to get on the birthday calendar, you know where to go. I have a title for that. It is over at chuckchat.com/wiki. Donna is so much faster at this than I am. I miss my wife.
Well, she's just in the other room. She hasn't gone far, Chuck.
I miss her as my video engineer. I mean,
hey,
I'm
sorry. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No,
you miss her as your video engineer. Yeah.
I miss her as my video engineer.
That's not as romantic as, hey, I miss my wife. Hey, by the way, Jason Alexander, when it said voice artist, and I thought for a second, one of my favorite cartoons back in the day, this is in the 90s, was Duckman. Do you remember seeing that?
No.
Where he's kind of a detective-ish duck. Anyway, it was aired between 94 and 97. It was four seasons. I thought it was kind of as funny back in there. I don't know if it stands up test of time, but Duckman was kind of fun.
I remember him doing voice work for The Hunchback of Notre Dame. He was one of the gargoyles. Pour the wine and cut the cheese. Every time someone says, our slogan at work is we make the world of work better for people.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes someone will say, works for me. Well, that's what I think of when they've got the catapult up on Notre Dame and they're keeping the people away, and they just sort of push the whole catapult over the edge and lands on the people. He goes, are you sure that's how that thing works? And he goes, works for me.
Yeah. You need to post a video of that on our social thing at work.
Let's get on with the news.
Aren't you going to say good news, everyone?
Oh, I just said that for Fry's benefit.
I like that story. All right. Now it gets tricky because I have to put pictures on the screen at the same time. So
you need like four arms.
Eric, I want to be in a to-
Well, at least three will get you there.
Mm-hmm. Wrong show. Okay. It remains one of the most unexpected scientific discoveries of the year. Yes, everybody is talking about this in the last couple of weeks. And the last edition of Astronomy Cast, which just came out today, I think, is also talking about this. Haven't had a chance to listen to their take on it. But to everyone's astonishment, British scientists last week revealed that they had uncovered strong evidence that phosphine, a toxic rancid gas, that often comes up at after eating Taco Bell too, but
or Thanksgiving,
that was produced by microbes, exists in the burning acid-drenched atmosphere of, see if I can hit this right, Venus. Ta-da! Okay. That by rights, it should simply not be there. Quote, all the geological and photochemical routes we can think of are far too unproductive to make the phosphine we have seen, said Cardiff University astronomer Professor Jane Greaves, leader of the team who made the discovery. And that conclusion leaves scientists with the bizarre prospect that microbial activity, the key source of phosphine in Earth, may be occurring in the searing, acidic, scorching, hot, pressurized clouds that swathe Venus. That was just fun to read. I'm sorry.
I thought that the atmosphere higher up was more akin to life than down below.
Don't know. Maybe talking that's about Jupiter. You know, we found some life on this planet in pretty extreme places, too. They're called extremophiles.
Right.
So it wouldn't be surprising. So let me read on a little bit more.
Well, the reason I was saying that was because I remember we even talked about it. They were talking about being able to put people on Venus, but not on the surface. They would have to stay above the clouds because the pressure was not as bad and the atmosphere was more sustainable for life rather than, or it was enough to be able to stay there, not necessarily you're gonna get crushed when you get to the surface.
Well, you would get crushed. There's just too much pressure down there.
Oh yeah.
So not surprisingly, the news that there may be bugs on Venus made front page headlines. It also adds to a bizarre new planetary focus for scientists hunting alien life on nearby planets. A search that is now leading them to increasingly strange and unexpected parts of the solar system. From the frozen moons of Jupiter to the methane-filled lakes of Titan, the largest moon of Saturn. While astronomers have yet to detect alien life forms, most are confident of success one day, though their journey will have taken them through some intriguing highs and some despairing lows. For example, in the late 19th century, and for much of the 20th, most astronomers were confident they would one day find life in the solar system. Well, you know, we always had those movies about Martians, right?
Wait till they find Earth.
Well, two worlds look especially promising. Mars and Venus are nearest planetary neighbors. This was written in the UK, obviously, because there's a U.
Wait a minute. I'm sorry. Let's back up one second.
Yeah.
Most astronomers are confident they would find life in the solar system. I think we're here. You mean elsewhere in the solar system?
Well, clearly there's no intelligent life here. Beam me up, Scotty.
Semantics. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you know, but I'm just going to let that one go. All right. We are 25 minutes into this 50-minute show. We've done the history. We've done the listener feedback, and we've done some news. Now we can take a real short break. What do you think?
Let's do it.
Okay.
Hi, this is Dave Slusher from Evil Genius Chronicles, and you are listening to Technorama because you're in the cool club.
Greetings, programs.
And applications.
I'm Ben.
And I am Keith, and we are
The Two Gay Geeks.
We are the nerds behind TG Geeks Webcast,
where we talk about sci-fi,
comics,
film,
horror,
genre.
You name it, we talk about it.
We release an episode every Monday morning at 6 a.m. Eastern.
You can find us on iTunes, Blueberry, Spreaker, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio.
Also, look us up on YouTube. And of course,
we can be found at tggeeks.com, where you can find not only our webcast,
but articles about other geeky goodness.
So come along for the wildest ride in the potosphere.
Did you just say potosphere?
You know, the history of podcasting panel I was on for Virtual Dragon Con, somebody said, when was the last time you heard Podosphere? I was thinking, I said, last week. Well, it's because we played a promo.
I think I played the promo last week. And I think I also played Dave Slusher, but that's okay. I can't
believe that's where I heard it. That's funny.
Yep. The other thing that I did embarrassingly today, I was interviewing somebody on a work-related podcast, and I record my audio to the external H6, which has a 16-gig card in it. Normally, that would be about 24 hours of audio, and I know I checked earlier in the week, and I had about 3.5 hours left. Well, it's amazing, because 1 hour went to our Tech Now podcast. 1 hour went to the topic is Trek. So I was halfway, I was 43 minutes into a 45-minute conversation with one of our customers. And I looked down, I went, it's not recording anymore. I just looked at it and it was at 43 minutes. What happened? Where did we end? So I'm shuffling around and trying to figure out where the conversation went over so we could redo the question and the answer. It'll all be stitched together fine in post, but... You know, there's definitely a paragraph in there that I wrote in Podcasting for Dummies that says, be sure to check your batteries on your portable devices and make sure you have enough storage on your hard drive or SD card.
Right.
First time in like 15 years that we've run out of storage, and it happened to be during a customer interview, which could be worse. We could be doing this right now because there's no way to really patch this together, where it's much easier to do the customer one.
Well, it's funny you bring this up because, you know, just the other day, I knew that our storage was getting a little tight on our web server. And, you know, rather than paying money for space we didn't need, I was waiting till it got to the point where I needed to expand it. And so I posted The Topic is Trek. I posted Technorama and I posted our Patreon show. I was like, oh, crap. I think we're getting and I looked in there. We were megabytes. I mean, it was enough where nothing was dead yet, but was close.
It's different when we used to do just a show a week and it was a few hundred meg or like, you know, my recording device. When you're recording, you know, less than a gigabyte a week, well, 16 gig lasts you months. I mean, I would look down and go, that's fine. And every once in a while, I'd delete some files. Well, now when I'm doing things for work and work and work and three podcasts for fun, it goes a little quicker. So I think I'm going to have to set me a weekly reminder now. So it's go clean off the SD card. The guy I'm interviewing says, you know, you can get a 128 gig card for really cheap these days. It doesn't matter. The more storage you have, it just means you ignore it longer and then it becomes a bigger problem.
Yeah, your limit is actually pushed back. It's over here now.
it's like having a big house and you have a lot of junk. So when you have to move, you have a lot of junk to clean up. If you have a small house, you have a little junk and you have a little junk to clean up. So I'm not in favor of the big storage capacity yet.
Yeah.
Well, that was an interesting sidebar. How about we get into the hacks and strange stories?
Yeah.
Your turn.
Speaking of getting smaller and bigger.
Yeah. How many pixels is your camera?
No. not 3.2 billion. So scientists and engineers in California are building a unique camera for a unique telescope. The Rubin Observatory telescope going up in north central Chile.
I'm not even looking at the article, so I can't correct you.
Okay. Can capture an unusually large swath of the sky in a single image. The camera is capable of capturing those images, has to be enormous. The one researchers are building at the SLAC National Accelerator Park Laboratory, I'm sorry, Menlo Park, California, it certainly is. The whole camera is about 13 feet from front of the lens to the back, where we have all of our support equipment, and the 5 feet, and it's 5 feet in diameter. So massive. That is kind of big. It's bigger than my desk here.
13 feet. Yeah, that's a big. What is that? About 4 meters.
Yeah. Yeah. And scientists in charge of the assembling testing, says Aaron Rudman, the scientist in charge of assembling the camera. Inside the camera are lenses, filters, cables, refrigeration equipment, and focal plane. Mine doesn't have refrigeration equipment. I need to upgrade. And a focal plane consisting of 189 detectors capable of taking 3.2 billion pixel image. Take that, Google. Next phone comes out. I want to see 3.2 billion.
So they have pixel. A sample image on here that is of broccoli. A 3.2 megapixel picture of broccoli. And I think the caption read, because of its fractal nature, they can get really detailed stuff. I think that's
right. And exactly. I was just thinking of, you know, the first time I remember seeing fractals, you know, what, in high school or something.
Yeah.
I remember thinking, well, that's kind of neat. You can figure out the math kind of works it out. But then you see it in nature in something like this.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing that, I mean, you know, just to see it, you know, manifested in something like broccoli.
Well, so there was a
Romanesco broccoli, and the picture is seen with a 3.2 billion pixel camera. Like I said, you can see all the little twisties and stuff. It's really cool.
Heck of a macro lens.
Yes.
There was a time in history when they thought that, you know, Craig was made up of a whole bunch of little Craigs before we learned about atoms and whatnot. I thought that was...
Yeah. We're all working in unison.
That's a frightening thought.
Now, I want to see this broccoli with some cheese on it.
Is cheese fractal?
Maybe on some level. I don't know. No, probably not.
All right. You're the Commodore man, so you get the next article.
All right. So, on Hackaday... Commodore 64 Miniman, which he made his own little mini Commodore 64, makes a matching monitor to go with it. If you've looked at a Commodore before, no doubt you've probably seen the Commodore's monitor that came out the same time for the computer. I would almost say it's almost as iconic as the computer itself because it has that same kind of look. But let me embiggen my font here. While putting together a retro computer is a great project and can teach a lot about inner workings of electronics, hooking up that 70s or 80s era machine to a modern 144 hertz, you know, 1440p display tends to be a little bit anticlimactic.
Well, just finding a TV that has an RCA input is a challenge.
That's true. Yeah. You can get adapters, but yeah, just finding that. But to really appreciate the true 8-bit experience, it's important to get a CRT display of some sort. But those are in short supply now. They are, as most are in a landfill somewhere now. Tony decided to create a hybrid solution of sorts with a 3D printing of his own Commodore replica monitor for a true nostalgic feel.
So was this... The monitor that they show in the picture, is this the model that they had? Is this his representation of that? Like, or is this something he came up with that would look good of that era?
No, that is the monitor that you could buy for the Commodore.
Okay.
It looks like this. This is exactly what it was.
Gotcha.
I didn't have this. I used a TV, you know, for
most people
my Commodore.
Did. Yeah.
But this is exactly what it looks like. Okay. I've seen it in many places, but if you look down below, I'm not going to play the video, but if you scroll down and look at the thumbnail in the video, you can see he's, he's admiring it. But you can see the tiny Commodore and you can see the monitor on top of it. And there it is with the screen. It,
wait, how do you put a monitor on top of a C64? The C64 was just a keyboard.
No, usually it has a little stand or something behind it.
Okay, so you, it was on a stand. You don't put it on the Commodore. Not like the Apples.
No, it's not that big.
Yeah, because the Apples had those expansion slot, you know, the back half was a place where you'd set the monitor.
Okay. Right,
The it bears a striking resemblance to a Toshiba TV that I had in college. It had that, you know, kind of a 14-inch flat screen.
Yeah, and Commodore monitor. I bet it is made by somebody like that.
It certainly looks like
I have
it.
To go, not come. Okay. When you search for commode monitor.
What? No.
Commodore.
Type better, Craig. Type better. Well,
yeah,
you're
I was going to see if I
that.
Could figure out what, okay. what you, it was made from. I think another company actually made it. I may be wrong, but you can see what it looks like. But it has that distinct kind of boxy feel like your regular TV.
Yeah, I just discovered something interesting by using the wrong keyboard.
But anyway, go watch the video. It's attached to the article. He talks about the computer and the monitor that he made. It's mostly about the monitor. I think he's got another video with the Commodore. So anyway, it's pretty cool.
We've got another one here. My turn. Over at Hackaday.com. Wasn't Hackaday the one that just did the monitor one?
Yeah, okay. I stacked them up. I stacked up a couple of them from Hackaday.
3D printed life is apparently a little bored. Instead of whiling away the time playing tic-tac-toe, he built an impressive tic-tac-toe robot named Tobot. Wow. It reads the
Sobot
same
was
forward
taken.
And backwards.
Well, from robot to Sobot was taken. So
the robot used a Raspberry Pi Zero, or uses a Raspberry Pi Zero and a feather to control the two-axis robot arm that can draw the board and make moves using a pen. It also uses a simple computer vision system to look at the board to understand your move. And it has a voice, too. The other thing Tobot has is a really big attitude. The robot wants to win. Badly. Check out the video below and you'll see what we mean. The code is on GitHub. We were impressed with the simple algorithm Tobot uses to watch your move. The 3D printed robot arm looks and works great, too. The initial PC board didn't work out very well, but the replacement did a great job. We love projects that combine mechanics, electronics, and software. Bonus points for the element of whimsy, too. We wonder if Tobot will learn to play some other games, like Dots or Global Thermal Nuclear War.
No.
I added that last part in.
Oh, okay.
Did I show the picture? I didn't show the picture. I was too busy reading. There's the picture of Tobot, and the video does show him winning... or her, I don't know, it winning. Of course, it knows. There's a way to get stuck in cat's games, but if the computer gets to go first, it's always going to win. So I don't know if that's quite the way it goes, that would be proper. So we'll have to see. But I do like the fun fact.
Anybody that goes first has an advantage to tic-tac-toe.
Yes. I think tic-tac-toe, wasn't that like one of the first games that you expected to write when you're learning on computers?
I don't know to be honest with you, I don't think I've ever written tic-tac-toe.
No? Oh, man, I've written tic-tac-toe in several languages. It's like
I'm trying to think back. I don't think so. Right. I wrote a video game based on the show V.
Your assignment now is to... Write a tic-tac-toe game in Service Portal on ServiceNow.
I knew you were gonna work that in somehow.
Yep. And have an integration to an AI farm.
Yeah.
All right. Shout out to the chat room. We've got a couple of chat rooms going tonight because I'm able to watch YouTube and Facebook.
Oh.
We've got John Miller Jr., Dan Coyer, Joe Fiore. Crazy Joe says, on a Monday? Yes, it's Monday. Who else do we have? We had your friend earlier. What was her name?
June Wessinger.
We had Steve Pritchard was in here. That's pretty much what I see on Facebook. YouTube, we got Dhruv Gupta all the way from India.
So yeah, look at there.
It is.
He says good morning.
Yeah. Well, it is. It's
yeah.
Currently 8 a.m. We're coming up on 8 a.m. in India. So 12 and a half hours in front of me. Halfway around the globe. So good day to everybody. It's funny because I think I could talk to him last night, India time, which was my video that I did this morning for work.
Right.
This studio does not sit idle very long. If it did, I wouldn't be able to keep it. All right. That brings us to, what is it? Remember when? Yes. Remember when? Oh, did you cross out that first one? You don't want to talk about it?
No, I changed it.
Accidentally. All right. We'll go quick because you wanted to talk about the D&D one as well.
Well, but we're also probably running up on time. So
no, we're okay for now. So right. You know the man who does the AOL thing? You've got mail. Well, his name is Elwood Edwards, and he is an Uber driver in Cleveland. I think that's about as much as we need to say about that article, right?
That's right.
Whole bunch of photos. Nice looking guy. I remember hearing about him after the fact. You know, people would spot him in public and say, will you say it? Will you say it? But haven't heard from him in several years, probably close to 10 years. But we have covered Elwood before on Technorama years ago. All right. Now there's another one you wanted to cover.
Yeah. So this game of Dungeons and Dragons has been going on for 38 years. So stay at home orders due to the ongoing pandemic have upended a lot of plans. Weddings have been postponed, concerts have been canceled, and vacations have been pushed aside. But one thing that can't be kept down, Robert Wordhaw's, that's a weird name.
Robert.
Wordhaw.
Robert.
Wordhaw. There you go. Wordhaw is Game of Dungeons & Dragons. For the past 38 years, Wordhaw has been playing the Game of Dungeons & Dragons in Canada.
With whom?
Well, it's the people that are at least 38 years old. So D&D is a fantasy tabletop game. He started playing in 1982 and must make it the longest continuous running D&D campaign ever, or at least the longest Wordhaw has ever heard of. So as
now that we're all in lockdown, though, has he taken it online? I'll bet places like Fantasy Grounds are seeing some subscription increases.
Oh, I'm sure. Actually, I was enjoying Fantasy Ground when we were playing with Scott. I thought it was the program worked pretty well.
Yeah, much nicer than what was it, Roll20 we used to use?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. So here you go. It started with just four players. Wordhaw playing with a friend when a friend introduced him to the game and accidentally left some rule books at his house. He was hooked. Guess what? I had an old friend that left his rule book at my house.
I accidentally left my accordion at Weird Al's.
Yeah. Is that what happened? He was hooked and he moved to, as he moved from high school to college to graduate school, he kept collecting friends along the way who wanted to be part of his epic campaign. What started out as just four players grew to nearly 60 today. 60?
How do you do a campaign with 60 people? It must be your turn like every 2 years.
You know, I remember our game that we played with Scott just recently. We spent 30 minutes arguing about one thing. Can you imagine 60 people?
Oh, it was closer to an hour, just figuring out how we're going to get over a wall.
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah. That's what I'm saying. So imagine 60. Well, not everyone plays at Wordhaw's house. Thank God. Many people drive and fly from all over Canada to take part in many other video chat in. Some streaming as far as United Kingdom. During the ongoing pandemic, Wordhaw's has relied on video chat more than ever, but it hasn't been all that bad. He says, players keep pointing out to me that there's more sessions than there's ever been because of Zoom. He estimates that it's now, he's probably hosted sessions two or three or several times, sometimes four times a week. Jeez.
Wow. Anyway, this guy needs a life.
He talks about his past and his everything. So go check it out. It's a longer article talking about what he hopes to do in the future.
What does he do in real life?
I don't know. You know what? At this point, I'd start a Patreon.
No kidding.
I don't know.
Unless he charges people to join the campaign, which, you know, if it's prestigious enough, you probably could.
Hey, by the way, I scrolled down and there's a picture with some igloos and Eskimos or something. It says he built terrain to accompany the game. When I scrolled down, you know what my first thought was? Mm. That looks like my Hoth playset from Empire Strikes Back.
It's the Kenner.
New from Hasbro, the Hoth playset.
Was it Hasbro or was it Kenner? Who had the Star Wars stuff?
Oh, I'm sorry, Kenner. Kenner.
That's what I thought. Well, they had some for a while. I don't remember who finally ended up with it. But alrighty, time for a thank you to our patrons.
Hey, well, you should watch the toys that
you know, I got to a certain point in that show, and it wasn't the toys that made me. I mean, it was interesting, but I lost interest because it wasn't anything that I had. It was either too...
I'm with you. Some things I was like, I watched because I knew what they were.
We'll come back to that in a little bit because there's some other stuff on games. Thank you to our patrons. This show is brought to you by you. Thank you for the donations with the likes of Alexis Duran, Elmer Elstead, Amy Bowen, Avner Braverman. Thank you, Ben Vaughn and Brian Brown. And Chris MC, Dandy Man Coyer, Danny Mortensen, thank you very much, Dean Jensen, Denise Inglis, Gary Lindros. Everybody is so generous with their giving. As little as a dollar a show, I need to put the Patreon thing up there. There we go. Normally my wife would be right on top of that. She hears the music, she punches the button. But I'm a little slower today because I have to keep reading names like Harold McKinstry, thank you, John Clifford, John Noble, York Ashrawan, Christina, Kyle Nishioka, Leon, Mark Kilfoyle, Mike Wills, Night Gig Studios, Saturday Morning Media, Stephen Wetchy. Craig didn't say it that time, but that's okay.
Wetchy!
There you go. Badgy.
Badgy. Badgy.
Steve Therian, Spiffy, Steve Cody, and of course, Steve London. We have the Steves all lined up. If you would like to be part of the lineup and get special content that is only available for our patrons, you can go over to patreon.com/technoramapodcast, just like it says on the bottom of the screen. Or if you're listening, let me say that again. patreon.com/technoramapodcast for as little as a dollar show. Get your name enshrined on the show every episode. And you get that extra content that Craig and I talk about. Oh, we've got a doozy this week. And
do we?
We will also, when we get to travel again, send you a postcard from someplace random. That'll be a lot of fun. So with that, I'm going to send the band on its merry way. Goodbye, band. Okay. Abort, abort. There we are. And we will move into Pass the Remote, where Craig and I each have an episode.
Here, hand me the remote.
It's not in here anymore. And I'm not handing you whatever it was.
Here.
The glasses case?
Yeah.
I hand you a Bluetooth speaker. How's that?
Yeah.
Hand me something through the internet.
All right.
My show this time around is, we were talking about games. And while I did not play many of these games, I found it very interesting to watch the evolution. The show is called High Score on Netflix.
Yes.
Very fascinating because they go through the history. They start out with Nolan Bushnell and founding Atari and even going back a little further than that to get you up to speed on where some of these go. They did the whole buildup of Nintendo and very interesting stuff about who did what. And some of it was not necessarily above board when they did it.
You're right. Yep.
And then they got all the way into like first person shooters and adventure games. Richard Garriott was on there for a piece. It was very fascinating in terms of almost like musicians, who influenced who and what grew out of what, and you know, why did they get their idea to do this and what was the revolutionary thing. It reminded me a lot of like the era of like the music of the 20th and 21st century of, you know, oh, I took pieces from that and I was influenced by that.
Yeah.
And then I said, let's do our own thing, and boom, this whole new genre appears. Yeah, it was really kind of fascinating from a game
and competition. There was a lot of competition between companies, of course.
You know, the early esports in like the late 90s, and they'd come back. It was almost like, where are they now? Kind of thing for some of these people who are the early pioneers of, you know, winning competitions. That MTV and on Alcatraz had this gaming competition. Like,
right?
Really?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I watched this too, and I like, I like the way they presented it, because there were some of the, like, none of them, I knew who Nolan Bushnell was, but a couple of them, they didn't tell you the person's name at first, and then they kind of circled back around and told you towards the end of the episode. I was like, oh, okay. And it may, you know, it kind of came full circle on each episode. Not always, but some of them were edited like that. And I enjoyed it.
They even did some interesting research into the history of people's names who were lost to history. For example, when you think of cartridge-based games, you often think of Atari. They were not the first. They made it popular, but they were not the first. The first cartridge games were invented by a guy named Jerry Lawson. He was in Silicon Valley. He worked out of his garage, and he said, I want to make a way to make interchangeable games on this system. Because up until, you know, if you bought Pong, that's all it did was play Pong.
That's right.
And, you know, he wanted a way to have multiple games, almost like you put a diskette or you know, program a computer every time. So he came up with the cartridge-based system. And interestingly enough, our ServiceNow headquarters is on a street called Lawson Lane. And I wrote the Santa Clara City Planning Commission an email saying, is there a connection here? I don't know if there is or not, but I have to think that there is. It's just a small little street.
What else did he do?
I don't know. He was kind of lost to history in terms of game design. I think he worked, I forgot who he worked for at the time. But, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if he was, you know, if our street is named after this man, it'd be kind of cool just to be able to go to work and say, hey, you know, here's a piece of trivia. Because I do know that our new building in Santa Clara that I don't think anybody's in, we built it just in time for the COVID thing.
Yeah.
The new building is on the site of the old Amdahl computers. And forgive me. I forget his first name. George Amdahl, one of the early computer pioneers workstations. I believe he originally hired, or Fred Luddy first worked for that company. And a lot of our culture comes out of that. So there's an employee connection to that company. And now we've got a building sitting on one of their old former sites. So that was kind of a neat little, I learned about that location from one of my Uber drivers who had been living in that area for about 50, 60 years. He said, hey, you know what used to be over there? And I went, oh, hey, you know what's going to be there? Back then, a lot of the computer buildings were just like one-story things.
Right.
It looked more like a army housing unit or something. Alrighty, right, that's mine. I give high score. Granted, I didn't play many of these games, but I certainly appreciate them, and I love the series. I'm giving this an 8.5, just from a geek factor, a history factor, the completeness of the research, the inside stories they did, the artifacts they were able to come up with, some of the games that still played. There was even a long-lost game that came to surface. I don't know if it was because of this series or the research they were doing on this, but one of the games came back and they said, hey, we lost the original source code, but somebody came up with the final product. And went, I still got a copy. It was kind of fun. So what do you got?
Hey, by the way, I was just looking up Jerry Lawson.
Yes.
You know, he lived in Santa Clara.
That's what I said. He's from Silicon Valley. It wouldn't surprise me if that's where the name comes from.
Yeah, I was going to say, I bet it is. Anyway, so I watched, it was on Netflix. I watched the Ip Man movie series. I saw all four movies. This is about Ip Man. He's a martial artist that.
I thought it had something to do with the internet. He was IP Man.
No. But Ip Man, he lived in China, and it starts talking about when it starts. These are not a documentary of his life, but this is about the things that happen, I guess, throughout his life, because the fights are typical martial art kind of film fights. You know, you see him lean down and kick, you know, three or four times. It's like, okay, nobody, that's physically not quite possible. But anyway, the fights are great. The movies are well done. I did look up a lot about what is real in the Ip Man movie, and a lot of the story beats were real, but not necessarily, like I said, all the fight scenes and stuff. But I enjoyed it. And Ip Man is the one that trained Bruce Lee.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah. And his son I'm not mistaken, his son, he trained his son, and his son ended up training Donnie Yen, who played Ip Man in the movies. So Donnie Yen has done a lot of martial arts stuff besides learning Wing Chun. But he learned that for this movie. And anyway, he was really good at it. But I thought it was great. You know, it was overdubbed, you know, the English part. So it looked like it was a martial arts film.
Where did you find it?
All for him. What's that?
Where did you find it?
On Netflix.
Okay.
So I would say, I would also give these at least an 8.5 because I thought they were all well done. And there's a spinoff called Master Z, who is, he was another martial artist that in one of the movies, and they kind of spun off and did another movie with him. So I haven't watched that one yet. So Ip Man.
Not IP Man. Fun. It's not Internet Protocol Man.
No. No. That sounds like something would be in Tron.
It's 56 minutes into the show. Do you want to do this one in the Geek Library or save it till next week?
Nah, we'll save it for next week.
Okay. Sounds good to me. And I think I'm going to come back with another Pass the Remote series or something for next week as well. So our question of the week as we sign out is, what movie is your comfort food? The one that you will watch time after time. Ooh, if I had the time. There's no time to talk about the time. We don't have the time.
Well, it's funny you bring that up because we're talking about movies. I do end up looking at the Star Trek movies, you know.
Sometimes was I referencing a Star Trek movie?
What's that?
Was I referencing a Star Trek movie?
Yes, you were. But there's been times I'm sitting here at the computer, you know, I'm done working or whatever, and it's just been a long day. I'm like, I just feel like watching something just to tune out. I'll throw in Star Trek and watch it. Any of the movies.
I would also agree Star Trek movies are an easy go-to. I also enjoy, although I have a hard time doing this in one sitting, any of the Lord of the Rings movies from Peter Jackson. Those are still holding up well for me anyway.
Oh, and those are such beautifully well-done movies.
Yeah, well-told stories. I can jump into any of them practically at any point. Also good for either History of the World, Mel Brooks, you know, when I need a good comedy, or
Holy Grail. That in so long. I need to see if it's streaming somewhere.
Or Kentucky Fried Movie. There's always time for a good classic comedy. The Zucker Brothers movie is a good to go. All right. We want to hear from you. We will ask you on social media next weekend and put it into the show. But for now, we are pretty much done with this. You know, I hit that button and I almost expected the ending of the topic is Trek music.
No, not this week.
It's blue. That's fun. The only thing my eyes can see right now. I'm really tired. Thank you for joining us. If you want to get in touch with us, reach out. Contact us on the listener line, 707-530-2428. Send us an email, technorama@chuckchat.com. Or you can find us anywhere on the internet just by searching for Technorama Podcast. We look forward to hearing from you and including your content in the show as well. This is as much your show as it is ours. 15 years coming up on 16. Woo-hoo-wee. Yeah. Okay.
We're getting old.
A lot of fun. Not many podcasts can say that, but we're really proud that we are. Until next time, be sure to tell a friend about Technorama. I'm not sure why. Nobody ever says, hey, I'm listening to Technorama, but you can always give them a binary high five.
You can't believe this show's been around for 16 years. 101, everybody.